This is News in Notes. I'm Ed Gordon on today's roundtable. A bit more about the verdict coming out of Philadelphia, Mississippi, and a senator called on the carpet. Joining us today from our New York bureau is E.R. Shipp, a columnist with the New York Daily News. At NPR in Washington, Joe Davidson, an editor at the Washington Post, and George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service, joins us from Maryland. All right, folks, just curious, we've been talking, obviously, in the first segment about the verdict that came down from Philadelphia, Mississippi. Joe Davidson, let me start with you and give us a sense of not necessarily what you thought of the verdict. I think most people thought that he would be found guilty of something, and we see it as indeed manslaughter, but whether or not you believe this, quote, closes a chapter.
Well, I think it does close a chapter, but the book is still a very long one. As was mentioned earlier, there's still the Emmett Till case, which is back in the news because of the exhumation of his body, and so that case still is very much with us. And also, there's still just the way this country has difficulty coming to grips with racism and the relations between blacks and whites. That's still an ongoing issue, as we might talk about later in terms of school desegregation. So I think that this is a chapter that is closed, but it's still a very long book.
E.R.?
I hope that in saying that a chapter has been closed, that we don't give people the comfort to say, okay, been there, done that, it's over. We have nothing to do with that episode, and we don't even have to work on correcting any of the missteps that had taken place. And I think of that in terms even of one of the topics you had mentioned in your opening, young people not keeping up with the news. I think Ben Cheney said something too about kids growing up in Philadelphia, Mississippi, not having even heard about what happened to Schwerner, Goodman, and Cheney. So every opportunity there is to remind us of our sinful past, I think we should take that and learn from that so that we can move forward.
George, I'm curious what your thoughts are here, because I know how passionate you have been, and you have been to a great degree a vanguard for journalism to make sure that these stories did not die. And when you hear about this, the reaction of African-Americans as relates to what Mr. Cheney suggested and young people not knowing about it, I'm wondering what your feelings are.
Well, first of all, I'm interested. I went to the Jackson Clarion Ledger's website, and it's really interesting to me to see the reaction of the community. And I think just one letter in here said they're talking about how the Mississippi has been ostracized, and they said they brought it on themselves. But it, then the reader said, while I realize much of that criticism was justified, it has nonetheless been heartbreaking to see so much of the good attributes of our state overshadowed by the senseless crime. There's a sense of relief and a sense of being picked on, but Mississippi has a very long, bloody record. And it's not just Mississippi, it's the whole South, and Mississippi led the nation in lynching. Yet neither of the senators would sign on to that apology for the Senate's inaction and failure to pass anti-lynching legislation. So a lot of the attitudes still remain. There have been about 22 of these trials now since 1994 regarding the civil rights era of the 50s and 60s. And actually, Mississippi has led the nation with about 5 of those convictions. So it needs to be done, should have been done, and his verdict was clearly a compromise. The man should be in jail for murder, but he's going to be in jail the rest of his life on manslaughter.
All right, let's
move
to...
Well, he's appealing, so we don't know that yet.
And also, it would have been very difficult, I think, to convict him of murder, given the evidence. I mean, trying somebody 40 years after a crime is always extraordinarily difficult because the evidence simply isn't there. You don't have the number of people to testify. I think that from an emotional basis, many of us might have wanted a murder conviction. But realistically, I don't think that was in the cards from the beginning.
But you know what, Joe? I think we shouldn't, and I don't necessarily say you're implying this, I think we should not go overboard with sympathy for this 80-year-old guy with a breathing tube. He deprived three young people ranging in age from 20 to 24. He deprived them of the ability to grow old and to have a life. So I know some people are saying, well, okay, he's an old man. It's over. It was 41 years ago. He still should be punished.
I definitely agree with that. I just think that I think it was unrealistic, really, for him for us to expect that he would have been convicted of murder, given the fact that so many people, for example, would not testify against him. There were seven people remaining from the earlier federal trial and the conspiracy to deny these people of their civil rights, the three civil rights workers of their civil rights, but none of them would testify against them. So you just have a very, very difficult problem as a prosecutor to convict anybody so long after a crime.
But that's the problem with all these cases. I mean, this case as well, you have to go back and read some of the transcript. And that's the whole point. This should have been done. He should have been convicted 41 years ago. This man has been allowed to go around for 41 years and basically live his life while depriving those three young men from ever even reaching the age of 25.
I just wanted to say that we talk about young people and how they don't understand this and haven't been taught that. But what's interesting to me is to talk to people who lived during that time, who lived in the South. My mother's reaction, for instance, who grew up in Alabama to this verdict, to see her feel like good for you and justice has been done was interesting.
I was in 11th grade when this happened in Alabama. I was in 11th grade. I grew up in a system of segregation, apartheid, and it is justice delayed. It's not even full justice now, but you need to start dealing with this because people have been sweeping it under the rug for all these years.
All right, let me move on to Illinois Democratic Senator Dick Durbin, who was essentially made, quite frankly, to apologize on the Senate floor for last week comparing interrogation at Guantanamo Bay to methods of Nazis and other repressive regimes. He was very emotional during this time. George Curry, when you see this happening, how much do you believe that this speaks to the idea that you can only say so much against America, American troops, American military, no matter what the case?
Well, with the crazy talk show hosts and stuff around the country, not all of them crazy, of course, but they whip up these kinds of things. You know, go back and look at what he said. What he did was read from an FBI memo. And this is what he said. If I read this to you and did not tell you it was an FBI agent describing what Americans had done to prisoners under their control, you would most certainly believe this must have been done by Nazis, Soviets in the gulags, or some mad regime, Pol Pot or others, that had no concern for human beings. That's what he said. Now, what he said later on, I think last Friday or so, he tried to clarify, saying he meant no disrespect to our soldiers, but basically reading from an FBI complaining about the treatment, and nobody's addressing that. They're addressing criticism.
It's sad to see this is where we have come. He has to apologize for apologizing. And what we're seeing is that it's easy for some of our I guess we call them colleagues at Fox News and others. It's easy for them to criticize and demonize the messenger and deflect attention from the message itself, which is what George just read. No one can deny that if prisoners are being held in chained to the floor and deprived of food and water in high temperatures, no one can explain that is something that's not horrific. That was what the senator was trying to say.
I think what we're seeing here is I think this is an example of a very effective conservative public opinion machine, which is in operation with Durbin yesterday and previously, and now also with Nancy Pelosi, a congresswoman from California, who's the Democratic leader in the House, who is on the receiving end of the same kinds of things that Durbin was for her remarks about the war in Iraq being a grotesque mistake. I think that the conservative publicity machine is really, frankly, very, very effective, very well organized. compromised. And in this case, it certainly has produced the result it wanted. One was, on the superficial level, seems to be the apology, but more than that was to draw attention away from the substance of his remarks, as my colleagues have indicated, and toward the language of those remarks.
And let's not forget that Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld is right in the middle of all this, equating that with Jane Fonda's comment about Vietnam. I mean,
he knows that if he throws in Jane Fonda, he's got his audience.
All right, let's move on to Massachusetts, the city of Lynn, Massachusetts, which is attempting to use a voluntary desegregation policy. And a federal appeals court last week upheld the school district's want to do this, and that is to consider race when making school assignments. They want to use race as a factor to decide if children may transfer to schools outside of their neighborhoods, and officials can also turn down transfer requests if they believe the assignment would further segregate either the school's neighborhood school or the requested school, the student's neighborhood school or requested school, I should say. ER, what's your thought here?
It's a tricky kind of issue here. One can use race in a positive way and one can use race in a negative way. I commend the people of Lynn who want to try to come up with a healthy racial mix in their schools. But I'm not sure that the way they're going about it is right. There are other things to do to make for a healthier mix of races in schools, and often it has to do with what happens before school. It's how people are living their lives, where they're working, the housing patterns and all of that are factors. And if all of that is in place, then these kids are going to grow up, you know, on little league teams and all that kind of stuff. And we won't have to worry about how to come up with the proper numeric formula.
But do you agree with the decision of the appeals court? Because all of those things you mentioned, the school system really can't have an effect on, but they can have an effect on the makeup.
At the point that the kids are ready for school, that's when the school system comes in. I'm saying I understand the verdict, the decision of the court, and I'm not disapproving it, but I'm just saying it's very, very tricky to start using race and numerics formulas to figure out how to make us live a more perfect union.
Let me be even more direct. Given the recent Supreme Court's decision in the Michigan cases in particular, I don't think this will be upheld by the Supreme Court, and I expect it to end up there.
Well, you know, one difference, I was wondering about that too, George, but I think one difference is at the college level, it's by definition selective. And so that's the difference between these kinds of desegregation or integration or affirmative action programs at the college level as opposed to the public school or K through 12 level, where school is mandatory and required that it be open to all, as opposed to the more selective regime they have in higher education. I think that one reason that this case in some ways is kind of hard to say yay or nay to is because it seems like there aren't any real bad guys on any side. You know, you have blacks and whites on both sides of this issue. You have basically people who are in favor of an integrated society on both sides of the issue. But there's this question about how you do it. And the Lynn program is a particular method that both black and white parents object to. On the other hand, you have some very strong desegregation advocates like Gary Orfield at Harvard, who's been on the forefront of this issue with studies for many years, who is very much in favor of the Lynn effort. And I think it goes back to something I said earlier, that it really shows that with these complex issues involving race, we as a nation really still don't know what to do.
I agree with you most of the way, Joe, but what I disagree is this court has basically been turning down anything that smacks of numbers or smacks of specificity when it comes to race. Unless you put this into a larger pot and look at it that way, the court has been ruling in the opposite direction.
You mean the Supreme Court?
Yes.
That's true.
Yeah.
E.R., you mentioned the fact of will we ever. Isn't part of the issue what we're seeing out of Philadelphia, Mississippi, and what we've been talking about, the idea that, A, we don't like to talk about race in public, B, we kind of close our eyes to the issues of the past and just wish it would all go away. And until we're comfortable with talking about race, one has to wonder whether it be court doctrine or just on a day-to-day basis, whether this country will ever grapple with the idea that we need to fix this problem and talk about it.
We do need to fix this problem, and we are working at it on some levels. I just turned 50, so I'm old. I'm almost as old as George Curry.
I'm almost as old as Joe.
but if we look around us, we are forever going to be scarred by what we grew up with in segregated South. I think all of us here had some experience with that. But if we look around us, we can see that there are some things changing. Look at who's the rap singers and the consumers of rap hip-hop culture. It's a multiracial thing going on there. Look at who's playing soccer these days. It's a multiracial thing going on there, too. I recently had people at my house, and it was, you know, white, black, Native American, and we never even thought about the fact that we were who we were. We're sort of moving ahead, and I'm saying that's a good thing. I want, though, for our young people to understand from whence we've come, and I think that's the part we're trying to cloud over somehow by saying that was 41 years ago, that was 50 years ago, whatever. They need to know what we went through. But they need to also stay focused on where we are.
And we haven't really said this. The major change has been in the South more so than anywhere else in the country. I mean, Northeast has probably been the worst. And with all the things happening in Mississippi, the South has changed more than the rest of the nation.
If we want young people to know that, and we aren't going to be able to get to this topic, which suggests that they are not reading newspapers, watching newscasts, or reading anything online that might, in fact, educate them about this, we've got a lot of work to do, E.R.
Ed, if you can do it in a rap, maybe that would be the way.
All right, well, we'll get you started on
that.
We'll get you started on that. E.R. Shipp, Joe Davidson, and George Curry, thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.